This episode is brought to you by NordVPN. Listen up, nerds. No. Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border and coast to coast and all the ships at sea.
What?
Hello, friends. Do you have a computer? Of course you do, because it's not 1987. Hell, you're listening to this on some kind of computer right now. But do you have a VPN? Oh, what's a VPN, you ask? Well, my friend, a VPN is a virtual private network and it offers two key benefits: enhanced privacy and security online. But VPNs do a lot more than that. VPNs shield your IP address, change your browsing location, and make online life easier. It's all about safety and security, my friends. But like everything else in life, it's also about watching TV. Don't let your paid subscriptions go to waste. I use NordVPN to access my home content while I'm traveling. Wink, wink. Plus, secure your connection on public Wi-Fi in airports, hotels, cafes, anywhere you go when you're traveling. There's over 6,300 servers in 111 countries, and you can find a nearby server for the best VPN speeds. NordVPN is easy to use. Connect with one click or enable auto-connect for zero-click protection. And it's got amazing speed. NordVPN is one of the fastest VPNs out there. And with just one NordVPN account, you can use it on 6 devices. It supports every major platform: Windows, Android, iOS, macOS, Linux, even Android TV. I think those are all real. Don't miss out on all the awesome benefits for using a VPN. Go to nordvpn.com/ifanboy today for a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee. The link's in the show notes. Once again, that's nordvpn.com/ifanboy.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found — I am not a therapist — I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it, and sometimes it makes you realize, like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/ifanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, HELP.com/ifanboy.
Hey, you're listening to the iFanboy Pickers League podcast. It's episode 374. It's brought to you by iFanboy listeners like you. Wow, I hit puberty right at this very moment. That's awesome. Welcome to the iFanboy Pickle League podcast, episode 374. I am Connor Kilpatrick, and I'm a man. Joining me, are you a man? It's Paul Montgomery.
Still up for debate.
And Josh Flanagan.
You're like the Paul Pfeiffer of podcasting. Did you ever notice at a certain point in the Wonder Years, Paul Pfeiffer goes through puberty, and all of a sudden he's just a tall, good-looking guy?
Yes.
Like, he's no longer the gawky, awkward dude.
Yeah. It's like the guy in Harry Potter.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
Let's talk about how good looking Paul Pfeiffer is for a while. That can't get weird. He's tan.
We are a fan. He's not tan. He's got olive skin. We are a fanboy.com. We like comics. We read comics. We can read a bunch of comics. There was a lot this week. One of us picks the best one, writes about it on the website, talks about it on the podcast, along with other books and other topics of interest.
Guys, I forgot to read them.
Before we get to the show, quick reminder in the morning. This is a review show, so if you're like Paul, you didn't read your books yet, you'll be spoiled. So why not pause and come back? Unlike Paul, who is now stuck here and will be spoiled.
This is a big time version of forgetting to do your homework.
Josh, by some magical, mystical happenstance, you had the pick of the week.
You're right, mate. All right. Well, as you can hear, I started smoking in commemoration. drinking nothing but whiskey. We had the Hellblazer number 300, the last of a long and proud lineage of mature readers' books, which are dying, much like the manatee of Southern Florida.
Is that dying?
Well, they're endangered and they're very protected. Unlike the manatee, there is no legislation to protect books like Hellblazer from the eternal grave and abyss.
Hellblazer 300.
Yes, I did say that because I knew you'd yell at me if I didn't. So we've been working towards this sort of long run-up to what the end of the book was going to be, and no one really knew, I think, what was going to happen. And I read through it. Basically, you know, it kind of felt like any other normal issue of Hellblazer, which we've seen a million times where John is in hell or on the abyss or on the edge of death or, you know, whatever, and then he sort of tricks and claws his way back, and then at the end he's, you know, he winks at Satan and is like, got you again. And this kind of felt like that the whole way through. Because really, at the end of the day, it's a pretty formulaic title. It kind of always has been. For whatever reason, though, we knew the character really well, and it was always kind of fun. It never fell into that trap of feeling like we were just doing the same thing over and over again, at least not for me. And at the end of this book, it was just that I don't actually know what happened at the end of this book.
Neither do I.
And you know, early in the day, somebody tweeted at me like, can you please explain to me what happened? And I was like, I don't know. I haven't read it yet. And then I went through it and I read it and I didn't quite understand the ending. And because I you know, spaced out sort of my reading throughout the day, I had more time to think about it. And it wasn't like I read it and I was like, that was it. It was perfect. That's your pick of the week. It was, I'd read that and I read my other books and I sort of thought about it and it came to me more like, you know, like the end of The Sopranos, which at first you really just didn't know what to think. You were like, what the hell was that? And this was a lot like that. In this sort of, it ended and something weird happened at the end and it's hard to explain. But the more I've gone on about it, the more I've thought about it, the more I like that a lot. I like that there's not an easy interpretation. And I have seen people talking about it. I haven't seen a thing that I was like, well, that's it. That's clearly what it is. Basically, John does find a way to get back to his corporeal being, but there's been a problem with it, and he's sort of he's being imbued with his own ashes, and then it sort of starts to fall apart. And I think he accepts the fact that, much like the title itself, it's not going to happen. So he fucks off, he leaves, and Epiphany, his young wife, is sort of left to be. I think she's like the stand-in for the reader. Sort of the way that I looked at it, and you know, I'll never love anyone else again. You're the best. And he's like, yeah, you know, there'll be others. It's fine. You know, there probably won't be anyone like me. But he goes on. And I feel a lot like that. You know, it really sucks. This is, if you didn't read my review or you haven't ever listened to the show, this is the title. This is the series that I have been reading continuously for more years than any other. I think since 1999, I've been reading this. I know from issue 150, I think. So half the run, I've been on it. And before that, I wasn't reading comics. So, you know, this is there's no other title that I have not dropped or got back on or gotten off at that in that time. This is, you know, the whole time of doing iFanboy, this is the only consistent title that I've bought every single month that's come out in that entire time. So, you know, it's important to me in that way. But at the same time, you know, it's funny because people will throw around all sorts of, you know, oh, corporate comics and blah, but it's not that, dude. It doesn't sell. And at the end of the day, that's it. It wasn't that the creative team wanted to move on. It wasn't that it didn't sell. They already did a motion picture. So, you know, at what point do they keep stringing it along? That it's,
I mean, Fables is going to keep going because it sells shit ton of books. So if Hellblazer sold like Fables did, you'd get more Hellblazer, yeah. but you're not.
You know, end of the day, you know, I will say they never screwed around with this book. They never changed. What it was to try to appeal to a broader audience, because I think they rightly knew that wouldn't work. However, you know, they did take the character of John Constantine, they created a second version of him and put him over in the DCU proper, and they're going to try to make that work over there. Good luck to them, I say. But
Paul, you know, did you read this?
Yes, it did.
And have you how much Hellblazer have you read before?
I'm a fair weather Hellblazer fan, so blame me. This is all because of me.
You know, it's not even the people's fault who don't read it.
Right.
There's no audience, you know.
No, but I picked this up, and one thing that I thought was kind of interesting about this, there's two sex scenes in here where Epiphany is having sex with someone. At first it was a demon who she thought was John, and then his nephew, and she doesn't know that, or she doesn't think that it's John. Obviously, she knows who that is, but in the moments before they do the deed, she talks about him smelling like John. And I thought that was kind of interesting that, you know, because we're coming to this point, the book isn't just ending, as you mentioned, it's going to be a new 52 book with Constantine number one.
Two.
Right. So I was kind of curious whether that was some kind of comment on if she's the reader. And it's about moving on. Like, having a facsimile of John in two different scenes in the same book, I thought that was kind of interesting.
That is interesting. I hadn't thought of it that way. I thought one of the things that was interesting is I was looking through the book. Sometimes when I'm trying to think of something to say about a book, I just sort of flip through it and I see what I can see.
Right.
And there's no color in this book outside of Epiphany.
The blue hair.
Very drab.
The whole thing is very drab and brownish.
It's very English.
And then her, you know, she's got her blue hair and her pink sweatshirt. And that's sort of one of the only things that really stands out. Or I guess it's a rope, a dress. I don't know what it is. It's a piece of clothing that humans don't normally wear, which you'll get in comic books from time to time. But I noticed that is like she's sort of like the bit of life in this. And what's really interesting about her as a character is that he's had all sorts of women and friends come into his life and leave, and they've always been usually killed. Usually they end up dying, and that's like his great curse. And that's the, you know, his whole story is he kept trying to get away from her over and over again. Because he thought she was going to get, you know, she was going to get hurt by him, and she never did. She was the one who was strong enough to sort of stand on her own. So anyway, as we get to the end, Gemma.
Let's talk about the end.
Gemma, who is his cousin, who he's always been around to help, but they've had a very strained relationship. She was raped and assaulted by his evil twin demon. So she's got problems with him, and she's given the choice to kill him or not, with this sort of magical gun thing, and she takes the shot, and he blows up into a burst of light in London. We move way up, and then we sort of find ourselves on the visual road to Liverpool, and we shoot down an alleyway, and we find this little pub at the end of an alley called the Long Journey's End. We shoot in through the door, and then we see a bunch of people standing around, and the very last panel of it, you've got a very withered looking John. Looking like, for all intents and purposes, like a Jeff Lemire drawing. He's staring dead on into the camera, holding a pint. He's got sort of his old duffer's cap, and he's got his jacket, but he's also got, he's just sort of dressed
Is that his jacket? It looks like a regular.
That's his trench coat. You can't have John without his trench coat.
But it's a different color whole book. Yeah, it is. I'm looking at two different pages next to each other.
I think the light in the pub is different. Look when they open the door.
It also has buttons where his other coat doesn't have buttons. It looks like just a regular leather coat. I think the whole point is he's a different man there. He's wearing different clothing. It's completely different.
Yeah,
the jacket.
He doesn't have epaulettes. You're right.
Yeah, it's not a trench coat. It's just see what I and I read this because I own a couple of Hellblazer trades, and Josh at one point lent me the whole Garth Ennis Steve Dillon one, which was amazing. So I picked this up because it was going to be at least talked about in the show, and it's a big issue. I thought the ending was he was sort of undone, and this is John Constantine as an middle-aged drunk in Liverpool who never had his life as Constantine. I thought that's what kind of what the punishment was. That's what I got at. I mean, it's completely silent. This is just me inferring everything.
Yeah.
But he's dressed as like a middle-aged guy you'd see at a pub in Liverpool, and he looks kind of terrified, like he's found himself in this position.
And he had a similar look earlier in the book when he woke up and got out of bed and realized that this wasn't going to work, this getting back into his life. So I don't know. I don't know how to interpret it. But is he reacting to something that he sees? And that journey through Liverpool that you talked about on the pages before, there's a girl reacting and a cat reacting. And is that John as like smoke pouring through it? Is that
I don't know.
Is it the reader? I don't know how to interpret it.
Listen, a lot of times with something like this, you could see this as a cop-out ending, or you could see it as just not making a choice. But I think that a choice was made. I just don't think they explained it to us. And I because it's this character who's never made anything easy for anybody following him, I think that fits.
It felt appropriate, for
sure. And I like that all of us can sit here and we can talk about it, and you can say, here's what I thought of. It's completely different than what I thought of, but I can't say, no, that's not right. That's not right. It isn't that. And around him are people who I know on the left side of him, I think that's a Vertigo editorial. I think that's Shelley Bond. Karen Berger is on the right, and I think Will Dennis, and then I don't know who the dude with the mustache is. Maybe it's the assistant editor of this book. And then on the right, that's not me. although I will say it doesn't completely look unlike me. And I assume that's the creative team, especially right. The Italian artist who's wearing a kerchief.
Yeah.
And then I guess Peter Milligan maybe in the middle. All the bottles and drinks and everything are the creative teams who've worked on this book. And by the way, to look through those names, everybody who's anybody worked on this book, at least from the sort of British side of things, it was a very important book for sort of upcoming talent to break through on. Amazing British artists all through there if you look.
So are you satisfied with the ending? Because when we talked about it before, especially the last issue, you said you wanted it to end with him giving the two-finger salute to whoever, the reader, to the world, to life, or Strange.
This and is that.
It went the other way. I don't think he's giving – I mean, I don't think he wins here. It looks like he's lost.
No, and you know what? I don't think that that's – he never loses. So that's not entirely inappropriate. But it is that FU is sort of coming at us, the readers, I think, to a certain extent, by not giving us something neat and tidy that we can say – oh, that's it. That's a good ending. That feels right. You know, we're left with a mystery of sorts. And just like David Chase won't explain what the end of The Sopranos was, he says he never will. I don't want to have this explained to me. And I like it as an ending. I think it's appropriate. I think it fits. And if you know this is what we get out of it, good. I don't ever want them to come back and explain it, or like the rescue of John, you know, as he. You know, somebody gets sprinkled some magic dust on him, and then he gets his other jacket back and gets back into it. It'd be horrible.
What if it's a story about him and Wolverine on the search for their jackets?
Well, I don't see how you could say no to something like that.
That's true. Now, if you talk about a week where there was a bunch of final pages that punched you in the stomach, Saga number 10 from Brian K. Vaughan and Fiona Staples. And we know from many years of experience that Brian K. Vaughan will do this to you at the end of his stories, his cliffhangers. He pulled out the old fist and punched it in your gut.
Guys, I'm concerned about the Lion Cat because I believe that's the vacuum of space.
I can't say I'm all that concerned about the Lion Cat. I don't find myself all that attached to the Lion Cat.
The Lion Cat doesn't look concerned. And I don't know if that's because Lion Cat is dead or because... No,
we don't know the rules of this.
It's cool this in the vacuum of space.
I don't know. I think this is one of those things like the end of it actually didn't hit me all that hard. I think it'll be interesting to see where it picks up. You know,
the Lion Cat has quickly become a fan favorite character. And yeah. this was something that happened that hit people hard on the website.
It is a cat in the internet. But I think that's like when everybody liked the Rage... The Red Lantern cat, and they're like, oh, my God, and I thought it was stupid.
Did you think Lion Cat was stupid?
I didn't really care one way or the other.
Well, this is great because I know I'm allergic to cats, and this cat doesn't appear to have hair.
Right.
Or at least as a short-haired cat, so I'm kind of cool with that. I like that it's not a cuddly creature and couldn't really give a fuck based on its expression most of the time. And I love the simple rules of the Lion Cat, that it says liar if you're lying. And that's really enigmatic. And also a planet gives birth to a thing.
That was great. That was my favorite part of the issue because it was just like, let's make this big and let's make this interesting. The other thing is I could sit there and watch the dynamic of the parents and Alana and Marco hang out on a spaceship for a long time.
Yeah. We get the great flashback in the beginning to when they were meeting and when they were sharing books and when he was a political prisoner and she helps him escape. And that's a great thing to flash back to and to see their relationship in its early stages.
From a craft standpoint, I think it's really interesting how effortlessly he's weaving between past and present. There's no little bit at the beginning that says this is then,
right?
You know, and then this is now. He doesn't have to explain that to us. There's a little bit of a shift in coloring, but you know, if you've been paying attention, you know what it is. It's not hard to follow, but that's a lot harder than it looks, I think.
Yeah, it's not hand holding, no. And I think creators often think that they have to handhold. Yeah. And
that 2-page spread with the planet giving birth, that is nutso.
Good, yeah, stuff. This continues to be the kind of book where it surprises you every time, mm-hmm. a little, which is good and exciting. It you don't know which way the character's going to go. You don't know what kind of crazy idea he's going to come up with next, and you really don't know what you're going to get every week, which you can't say about a lot of books, which isn't, you know, which is fun, which is good.
And I like, for all the crazy concepts and cosmic stuff going on, like a planet giving birth to a baby and or a baby something, and you know, bounty hunters and cats that are, you know, I was going to say human lie detectors, but feline lie detectors. It's still a relationship book. And it's all about the character dynamics and families and in-laws and stuff. And it doesn't feel like melodramatic soapy. It's just all of these things come together in this great confluence of story and great characters that you like. And even anti-heroes that you like.
You kind of like almost everybody, yeah. In a certain way. Or you at least want to spend more time around them and learn more. That's true.
Mm-hmm.
Now the Sixth Gun,
we haven't talked about this book in a while.
No, we haven't. And I thought it was interesting this week that there was two issues that came out. And I thought for a second that there's Sixth Gun 29, and then there was Sixth Gun Sons of the Gun number 1. And I thought, well, is that a reprint? What is that? Is that a thing? And I picked them both up. And not only does this book come out very regularly, and it's Brian Hurt doing a ton of work. They eventually brought on Bill Crabtree, I think, to color it, and then a different guy to letter it. But for a while, you know, like, he was doing everything. Mm-hmm. And then I realized this week that both of these issues were illustrated by Brian Hurt. The man, can we check on him? Is he okay? Is there some sort of labor law that Oni is flouting to keep
it wasn't,
him working?
It wasn't full of people doing stories. I thought it was like a side project.
No, it's co-written by Brian Chirilla, but it's and Cullen Bunn. But other than that, the art team is the same, and it doesn't suffer. It's you know, the same work that we've come to expect.
Deal with the devil.
Yeah, a lot of it took place in the desert, which helps. But basically, the one issue is fine, you know, is good. It's sort of the continuing saga of Becky Moncrief and sort of her hardening against the world as she spends more time around this evil gun, and she meets again with that Kirby guy who screwed her over, and then she goes, you know, after for revenge. This is her tough girl episode. And then Sons of the Gun number 1 is a look back at the history of the weapon, not very far back, because these guys are all cowboys also. And it's another guy who had, you know, the one of the guns, and how he finds another gun, and he's a big, bad, mean dude. Bill,
no, I didn't get to this. Is the goat in it?
Goat.
The goat who has the wreath of guns. That's
no.
One of the early great images from the main series. Anyways,
no,
go ahead.
No, that's not. The dude's name is Bill something. He's got a big, scary name. There's a little bit of flashback.
There's another Bill.
Yeah, it's not that Bill, I thought.
Billy Goat. He might turn into a goat with a wreath of guns around his neck.
Yeah, that's true. I guess that's possible.
Heard it here first.
But this was this was actually, they're both really interesting. And it's the thing about this book is that, you know, I'll be honest, I don't tend to think about it that much, and I don't tend to put a priority on it, but pretty much every time I read it, I'm like, you know, that is real good, and I don't, you know, I don't want to put it down. I want to keep going with it, and I find that interesting about this book. I'm think about how long it's been around, and now they're doing another.
It's always impressive when a book like this gets as far as that.
Yeah.
I mean, and that sounds so dismissive, but it's true.
Yeah.
And it's not about the book. It's about the marketplace, and it's always impressive when a book that is independent and completely not superheroes, and even at this point featuring cowboys, gets to 30 issues through a company that doesn't really do, you know, series all that often. So,
and you know, if you think about it, Cullen Bunn's been around for a long time. He made his career off of this book. Now he's doing lots of work, and this is, you know, not to pick on him, but this is still the best thing he's doing by a long shot, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
And it's great that it's still around. But if you were thinking, like, well, I don't know if I want that spinoff. If you like the main book, don't miss the spinoff because it's just as good. It just sort of looks – it does that thing that seems like the obvious thing. You always want to go, well, we've had these guns. They've been around for all time. Let's go back and look at the history of them a little bit. So we're taking our first step backwards. And I think there's just going to be more of stories like that. And so they can be anywhere with it.
Now, Paul, quick disclaimer on Thor.
Right. So my disclaimer, Thor God of Thunder is one of the books that I write the AR recap scripts for Marvel. So disclaimer, there you go. But I love this book.
Well, you know, one of the things I really liked this week, I didn't notice it until this issue, and this is Thor God of Thunder number 5, is that you can see the pencil work through the inks, through the colors.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like in the shadows, you can see where he is taking his pencil and filled in the shadows.
There's a couple of things where instead of filling in the blacks, they just left the sort of pencil hatching.
Yeah, that's what I mean. You can see the you can see it. There's that one page where it's a flashback to when he cuts the Gore with the hammer. I mean with the big axe, and then
right.
The next page at the very top, you see Thor's arm sticking out of the shadows. Yep. And you can see all the pencil lines. I love that.
That's really interesting because what a lot of people might not know is that a lot of times what will happen on a page like that is that the artist will just
put the X in.
Right. The artist will just put a little X there, and then somebody, possibly not the artist, possibly will literally go in Photoshop and just bloop, just spot the black. But here they're just letting
– or the inker will usually.
Yeah. Somebody's assistant. Like it just – it's not – it's sort of a grunt job.
And really it kind of should be. You want – the artist to be focusing on the more detail work and not having to fill in,
but it just makes this feel handcrafted in a way.
Yes.
And this is a thing where, you know, our comics have become very not handcrafted. You know, a lot of them never even see paper anymore.
Right.
And so there's definitely something, there's an aesthetic to that that's really
even the page before that when he blows up, you can see Thor's rendered all in pencil line.
Yeah.
Which I really like. I love the way it looked. It really felt, it feels, there's a special feeling to Esad Rubik's art.
There's a definite Frazetta-ness to it.
Mm-hmm. Of course, yeah.
And it fits really well with this in a way that I don't think it did so much on, like, you know, Ultimate Avengers or Ultimates or whatever.
So I'm just on the edge of Gore's story, you know, like being able to understand what he is and what he's all about, but I'm still holding on. I love these three takes on Thor. I love old Thor teaming up with middle-aged Thor.
That's the best.
That's great. And that he thought he was Odin at first.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Because he looks very similar, but it's I'm you. Just you know, later. And so the weird experience for me, since I'm doing those recaps, is I get to read the scripts first, and then I read the issues. So sometimes I get a little bit more detail in terms of proper nouns and stuff for what things are. So I don't want to get into the behind the curtain stuff, but that does make it an interesting reading experience. But still, I just think it's a perfect blend of it's like. This writer, this artist, this particular topic, it's just a great, perfect storm of agnosticism. and it's a serial killer story, but it's also like mythology.
But on a grand scale.
On a very, very grand
cosmic
time travel. And yeah.
Yeah, but he doesn't like, I really like how it's all coming together, I think. You know, if you just from the disparate points, and it looked like it could have gotten kind of confusing, but it looks like it's going to come together really nicely. And I also like that Gore is, it's like most like good bad guys, he thinks he's the good guy.
Yeah.
And I'm not entirely sure that he's completely wrong.
Well, we get his origin story next issue, so you can decide for yourself.
Yeah, but it's interesting.
Do we explain why he looks like Voldemort?
Voldemort? No.
Now, had it not been for the ceremonial importance and sort of really interesting thought-provokingness of Hellblazer 300, Baltimore, the Widow in the Tank might have been a very, very good candidate for Pick of the Week.
There's a good case for it, yeah.
Paul, you read it, I guess.
I did,
Thank
yes.
Thank goodness. Thank God you're here.
Listen, I'm right here.
I was so
I
alone
can hear
before.
All this.
Out.
No, I'm right here with you, man.
I didn't know what this was going to be other than I knew it was a one-shot, but it was basically – we've talked about Baltimore before. He's a vampire hunter, World War One veteran.
Peg leg.
Peg
leg and harpoon.
That was my favorite part of the entire story is that he goes up, knocks in this woman's house, and he comes inside, and it's just a shot of all of his stuff on a chair. Like his harpoon and his pack and his gun and his spear, all that stuff. There's two short stories in this one. The Widow and The Tank.
And The Tank.
And they're both sort of minimalistic, just sort of looks in these stories that, you know, the first one, Baltimore goes to visit a woman whose husband was probably turned into a vampire in the war. And you know, Baltimore's there to, he kills vampires. That's what he does.
It's sort of a spoiler thing. Like if you see Baltimore, you know, going somewhere,
yeah,
it's probably a vampire. So it can kind of ruin the story for you. But yeah, I agree that I like that it's sort of got that Mignola kind of sparseness to it. That like it's like a haiku, his short stories. And I often like his short stories better than his longer.
I'm definitely
stories.
Feeling that. I think when we're talking about Hellboy and Hell, we're not. That's, you know, what that feels like as opposed to what these shorts feel like is very, very specific, I can, very noticeable. The second story I liked even more, The Tank. There's just a withered old World War One era tank, which are fascinating looking things just from an aesthetic standpoint.
Yes.
There's a vampire who's rumored to be inside the tank. And
this is a neat idea.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And the story takes a twist that you don't see coming. It literally, just go out and buy it. I think that story's maybe 8 pages.
Is the tank a vampire? Is that the twist?
No. But maybe there's something worse than the vampire in the tank. A lot of it is spent with Baltimore talking to the vampire inside the tank, and the vampire is sort of like, "I'm not coming out." Basically, there's a lot of that, and then there are monsters.
It's just kind of a creepy, like, you know, it could have been, you know, a haunted house, but instead it's this little like derelict tank left in the middle of a abandoned battlefield.
Yeah.
And so it's just a neat idea. It's a neat setting, and it's sort of like that urban legend that this little kid comes and asks Baltimore to help him with this vampire because it's eating all his friends and his sheep.
But it's all very matter of fact still.
Yeah, that's.
I just like if you look at just the first page of that story, the kind of pacing that we're talking about. That page has 5 panels, and it's just a close up of a flower, farther out of a field full of flowers. Then you see like a wide shot of the tank with the flowers sort of around it. Then you see a shot of Baltimore sort of walking down the road, and then the last panel is he's just walked past us, and we're seeing him walk away. And that's that kind of breathing in a page that really sort of – that's really good mood-setting storytelling. And I know it's really easy to read past something like that and not notice it, but the more I look at things like that is one of the reasons I really, really like it.
And this is Ben Stenbeck, right? He's one of my favorite collaborators for Mignola.
Yeah, and he's done all these so far. Just a great one-shot.
This week we had 2 big new releases from DC, Justice League of America #1 and Vibe #1.
League of America's Vibe #1.
I feel like every character should have their team affiliation above the title. So like when Batman eventually joins all the teams, it'll say Justice League, Justice League, The Outsiders, Justice League International is Batman.
What if you have double affiliation? What if you're Wolverine? You have to have
page.
all of your
you get on the cover.
Yeah. Shield in association.
It's like the opening of a film with all the production companies.
Right, exactly.
So Paul reviewed both these books on iFanboy.com, did it very eloquently, and we'll talk about Justice League of America first.
Okay.
From Jeff Johns and David Finch, this is the government's response to Justice League. They form their own government-backed super team to be there just in case they need to fight Superman and Batman and Wonder Woman, so they're going to throw Catwoman at them. Paul didn't love this. I actually quite enjoyed this, mostly because, as longtime listeners will know, if you put 2 people around a table with a bunch of dossiers picking a team, I will love it.
I just wish the people around the table were like the actual team members and not shadowy, you know.
Well, Steve Trevor is on the team.
He's
got a gun. He's got a bad attitude.
He's Steve Rogers when Steve Rogers is boring and not Captain America. He's just a dude in cargo pants.
I did like the idea that they're not comfortable with the Justice League team and then they want to have their own team. And it is very much shades of the cartoon world, which I did like. It makes sense. It makes sense that Argus would want their own superheroes.
Now, Paul's argument was that it was a bit grim and self-serious.
Oh, totally is.
You're cool with that?
I'm fine with it. It totally isn't. A lot of that has to do with David Finch, who everyone is very tense in his books.
Yeah,
everyone has lockjaw.
Everyone is straining. Yeah. I think with another artist, it maybe might have done better for me. See, the thing is, people were saying in the comments I was kind of harsh with this, and maybe I was. Maybe another week it wouldn't have been I give it a 2.5. It would mm-hmm. have been like a 3, certainly not a 4. But I think really it's come down to the fact I'm tired and frustrated with the super serious stuff, and it's just posturing. That's what it feels like. And I think we should ask a little bit more from our superhero comics, that they have a bit more confidence in themselves. And
see, I think though that we, for the
I think it's a lack of confidence. I think it's.
I think for the first time in a long time, we actually get a choice of both. It's just that when you make them all one way, there's going to be a market that are not satisfied by it. And if you make it all the other way, then those people are going to be happy. So like, literally, Geoff Johns is doing both things. He's saying, okay, well, you people get this and you people get this.
Okay, well, we can all agree on the Manhunter. It was a great scene.
The Manhunter scene was great. I do like the fact that I'm going to get John Jones, which we haven't gotten in a while. I do like the fact that I'm going to get some Hawkman, which I haven't gotten a lot in since the first month of New 52.
I think there should be a new origin. They should explore.
Stargirl's a great character, and it's one close to Geoff Johns' heart, so I think that'll be interesting. I think the mix is interesting.
I like the roster.
So it'll be, I mean, I'm not, mostly. I didn't fall hell over heels in love with it. I did enjoy it though. So we'll see how it goes as a counterpoint to Justice League. This team would still get its ass handed to him by the regular team, but if there was a fight, but, so there's that. But then one of the members of the team was Vibe, who got his own book. And I read this
because you demanded it.
Reluctantly, I read this.
Curse your dopeness, Vibe.
I enjoyed it.
I love those animated shorts on the Cartoon Network.
They've been pushing Vibe. Vibe's been getting.
They've been pushing Vibe. I wish this was as now. This wasn't bleak or anything. I wish it was as fun as those shorts, those animated shorts. The thing that I like the Vibe has heart, and he even has heart in the Justice League of America main series. He just seems like a nice kid, and he's just at the start of a superhero career. And he's not, you know, jaded and grimacing as much as everyone else is. And I like his relationship with his brothers. We get an introduction here. His origin story is that he was caught in the event horizon of the first boom tube opening of a parademon coming into the New 52 world. And he was trapped along with a spray of Skittles that he was eating. And I don't know if the Skittles have anything to do with his powers. It looked like it. the emphasis...
So then-
In addition to the vibrational,
rainbows.
he tastes the rainbow.
He tastes the rainbow, yeah. And so the new power set is that he can manipulate reality, sort of, and he's like off frequency with the rest of the world. So that's for a while, it looks like his superpower is that you can't take pictures of him; he's just blurry. But he has a better power, which is that he can like punch you with dimensions. I don't know. It's confusing.
It's interesting. I didn't expect to enjoy it as much as I did, to be completely honest. I enjoyed it. Enough to continue? I don't know yet. We'll see.
I like the ending. I like the dun-dun-dun at the end.
Yeah.
Big giant door with an Omega symbol on it. And
they've got Darkseid's daughter.
Daughter is in there.
We'll see. We'll see what the week looks
like. I
like
how wacky that is.
Yeah, I did enjoy that. But we'll see. I didn't dislike it. I liked it. I enjoyed it. It's hard. It's Vibe. I have a...
Listen to you equivocating.
I was reading comics when Vibe was, you know, a person in the world in comics. And
he made sense in the ridiculous 80s with his...
No, that's the thing. Even then, he was a joke. So I found very hard. It's like they're reclaiming this thing that was silly and they're making it serious, and I haven't gotten around...
Of course they are. That's the classic comic book thing.
Well, I dislike the fact that there was no, like, you know, spinning around on his back on some cardboard.
He's not going to be breakdancing because that was the 80s.
That makes me want to read
Step Up movies and all these, you know, I thought they might do something with the dance stuff. But
I think that was really the source of all the jokes about Vibe. Anyway, kids, if you're like me, you buy everything short of your groceries on Amazon. So if you're doing that, and even sometimes your groceries, I was trying to buy some Boylan ginger ale because I can't find it in any damn supermarket in Los Angeles. Anyway, if you are doing that, you might as well give us a little help by going to ifanboy.com/Amazon. It redirects you to Amazon. It doesn't change Amazon for you. It just does a little redirect. It puts a little code in your thing that gives us a piece of all your purchases. Doesn't cost you anything. In fact, it takes money away from them and gives to us. And if you're that kind of person who likes to stick it to the man, this is perfect for you. Help the little guy out. by going to ifanboy.com/Amazon and making your purchases through there. And it would really appreciate it because I can't do it all myself. That's what I like to say, but it's sadly not a joke.
And we can see the weird shit people buy. We just don't know who's buying it, right?
Right.
Exactly. That's the whole thing?
Well, so, I haven't looked in a while, so I don't know if they've changed their back end, but
we shouldn't be talking about this.
Right.
I do know we cannot see who buys what. That's for sure.
I'm just saying you can buy porn. We won't know. We'll just we already know that you're deviants out there. So.
I know over the years we've seen some sexy items being purchased, which we all been which sex. Is
they don't have
good for all of you. Anyone should be should be applauded for getting on whatever they're getting on.
It was a big box of panties.
Whoever out there is buying all those Rubbermaid boxes, we're a little concerned, and the rope, we're worried.
Happy number four concluded the miniseries, and I think this is one of my favorite miniseries that's come out in a while.
Yeah, it ended nicely.
Yeah.
Nice being relative.
Oh, it ended badly because that's the whole world, but I thought this was a very un-Morrison story.
It was a very, but it was a very Robertson story.
Yes, very much.
So I was like, well, that was the right guy for this.
Oh, perfect. I mean, everything is sort of dirty and everybody's kind of fat and unshaven and bleeding. It's just that everyone's got those crazy eyes and it was fun. There was a bit of a strange bit of hopefulness to the story that was behind the veneer of really awfulness. And it just really touched me. And that sounds horrible from the subject matter, but it was touching in a way I didn't expect it to be. Is what I'm saying.
So is the blue Pega donkey corn real or is it a figment of imagination? I read the first
issue.
Where
is John Constantine? We don't know.
Well, it seems to be it is an imaginary.
That's what he's looking at the end of
Elbit. Comes to life, and then there's a blue feather that's real. So apparently it was real.
Ish.
Because the main villain, or one of the main villains, was felled by a bunch of imaginary characters, which as you could see in the panel of the week features. So
it was all the imaginary friends come to life. There's power in those.
Yeah. There's power in imagination, Paul, which makes sense if you're talking about Grant Morrison.
Yeah.
Well, there you
are. You go. Now, Avengers number 6 was funny because I keep forgetting that Peter Parker isn't Spider-Man.
Yeah, I don't like
because I don't read those books. So like when he shows up here and he's a dick to Cannibal, I was like, well, that's a weird choice for
Peter. Oh, they have to do that? Yeah. That's weird.
And so then I remembered, oh, right, it's not him. But
I don't like it because it means that someday, if you were ever going to go back and read this, you'd be like, what the hell's going on here?
It's the blue Superman thing when you're reading Morrison's Justice League.
Yeah. True. So, but I did like this. I still don't love it though.
I'm losing interest quickly. Mm-hmm. Like at this point, I don't know why I'm reading. I just hear your voice in my head, Connor, going, "Well, you know, in the end, it's going to be good." But I'm also thinking, like, yeah, I know. But if I'm not enjoying it now, what's the point? It's not even Jerome Pena anymore. It's oddly enough a Kubert drawing like Jerome Pena, which is really funny.
I don't know that I would tell you to stick with it because it'll make sense in the end. Because even though that was the case with Fantastic Four, you know, I don't know that it was your cup of tea anyway. So
I think that's more what I'm getting at.
Yeah,
I've checked out for
when
now.
When is it the Kuberts are aping? That's weird, right?
When do they get middle aged?
They have
to me, they're always like 30.
They have to run the school now.
Right.
Well, if their dad was 90, I mean,
I'm just waiting to get beyond these character pieces. I just want to see what's going on. I mean, they're interesting. I just don't care really much about these characters all that much.
Yeah, I'm getting a little of that.
So that's where I'm at with Avengers.
So
you
got
if their showcase doesn't make you like them, you know, their showcase.
No, I don't dislike them. I just don't really like. I'm happy when Tony Stark shows up.
The Avengers app.
Oh, hey, someone I like.
It is the Avengers. If you're in there for the Avengers, you know, let's do some avenging.
I don't know. I don't dislike it. I gave it a solid 3. You know, it's not bad. I want to like it more than I do. Is my problem.
Demand more for your comics.
Well, there you go. How many issues of this Lock and Key you got left?
Oh God, I hate that counter. It's 4 left until the end.
Oh, so it's like
Lock
a longer
and Key
mini-series.
Omega number 3. What I love.
This is it, right? This is the final mini.
This is pretty much it. Although it's tempered by the fact that they've talked about wanting to do more stuff in this universe.
But this family,
the main thrust is
this family, though, yeah, and sort of the good thing about this is that coming up to the end in the final issues, they're doing a lot of stuff with the family and just character stuff. And there's this is a prom issue, and I got to thinking about Connor, you always mention liking like the baseball issues of X-Men where it's between arcs and they go out and play a game or something, and or is that Ron?
No, that's me, Enron. But the thing, is, they do that in Lock and Key occasionally. I remember a couple of minis ago, they had that issue where the daughter went spelunking and the kid, the brothers hung out. There was that one issue where everything kind of slowed down, and that was really nice.
Yeah, and but the thing is with this is that it's both things. It's progression of the evil character Dodge's plans to open up a portal into a demon realm. And I'm going to try not to spoil too much because I know a lot of people read this in trade. It's just I really like these characters, and there's some messed up things that happen to the mom who is a struggling alcoholic, and it does not go well for her. Dodge uses his shadow people to make her drink like a lot, like he force feeds her booze. Mm-hmm. And like as a torturing method, and then Kinsey comes home and finds her that way, and is just she's like I can't believe you're doing this to me, and you know my friends are here, and you're just such an embarrassment, and I'm ashamed of you, and it's not the mom's fault, this was done to her, and so Dodge is just really messing with people, and it's a really evil villain, and there's no punches being pulled here, and I'm kind of afraid to see what happens to this family because I really like them.
Would you say this is your favorite series?
Right now. I mean, my favorite overall is the same as yours. It's Preacher.
Hmm. Current does that.
Yeah, but as a current, you know, I keep saying it's, you know, it's my the best things on the shelves right now. It's just consistently great. And
it's,
yeah,
you know, Mad Men.
Yeah, yeah. Although I like Mad Men too. But this is, you know, just Joe Hill and Gabriel Rodriguez both. Whether they're experimenting or doing a traditional, like a really laid back issue that involves forced booze drinking, it's just great. I can always count on Lock and Key, except
guys,
when it's gone.
I liked Nova number one a lot.
Yeah,
I did. I don't know. I wasn't even gonna read it because I'm reading a lot of stuff, and you know, I don't really care about Nova all that much, but. I thought, what the hell? It's McGinnis and it's Loeb, and they've worked well together before, and it I liked it. I like the idea of there's like a elite Nova Corps with the black helmets, and I liked that the setup. I liked the idea that there's this, you know, washed up drunk Nova guy with his son, and I liked everything about it.
I read 6 pages and put it down.
Really?
Yeah, I just felt like I wasn't digging it, so I just stopped.
Okay. Well, I really like the structure of this. I like that it starts off with a flashback to. Jesse is the father, and his glory days in the Nova Corps with a Nova Corpsman who's a lot like Kilowog, to be honest. He's a tiger guy, but same kind of vibe. And then he's narrating it, and then the kid who's heard the story
can't help themselves.
Yeah, and the kid Sam is breaking into the narration because he's heard the story so many times, and he's got that thing. You know, there's the petulant teen character who has to learn a lesson before he can become the hero, and there's a little bit of that, and that's.
Have you met any teens? They're all dicks.
I mean, I want to read about them.
Right. That's. I mean, well, vibe I mean, isn't that, like that.
Well, vibe is not as realistic as Nova is.
That's true. That's fair. And I don't. I mean, it didn't make me want to throw the book across the room. It's just. But I like, and there is a balance. Of when he's being sort of petulant and a teenager, and when he really cares about his sister because she still believes the father's stories about the Nova Corps,
and he helps his dad out by coming from his dad. Work. And I really liked the character a lot. I thought he was. I didn't think he was that petulant to be as he could have been. I thought he was actually really interesting. And
is the character's name Sam?
Sam Alexander. Yes. Yeah.
So he named the character after his son.
Yeah.
Fine, and I just, you know, I get an Ultimate Comic Spider-Man vibe out of this.
Yeah, I really like it a lot.
Vibe. I shouldn't.
It's the show for it.
So at the very end, it's sort of the call to adventure. He's his dad has disappeared, and then Rocket Raccoon and Gamora show up at his hospital bed because he was skateboarding. That's a little annoying, the skateboarding thing. I guess people do skateboard, but he got into a coma or something from. Skateboarding accident, and now they're, I guess, going to ask him to join the Nova Corps, which he didn't believe in. I like the setup a lot.
Yeah, and it's really, really, really fun. Yeah. Now, Paul, you're not reading Batman Beyond Unlimited, the collected edition of the digital shorts, right?
No, but like whenever I hear you talk about it, I get
why aren't you
really excited about
it?
I know I should be.
Because you loved the animated shows and even Batman Beyond, which I didn't even watch. This is like right in that world, and I thought,
well,
this would be
what's happening with Terry McGinnis? And
well, what's interesting is this is three different stories. It's there's a Batman Beyond story, there's a Justice League Beyond story, and there's a Superman Beyond story. So every issue has one chapter of each. And the Batman Beyond story, I'm sorry, there's actually four in this one, strangely enough. Starts at the end of Return of the Joker, the movie.
Okay.
Like it ends with them taking away Jokerized Tim Drake to get fixed, and they go bury the Joker, and the consequences that come out of that, and the Barbara quitting because she can't deal with it anymore, and then jumping to the future and dealing with the fact that Bruce had this little super jail under the Batcave, super morgue for the dead super villains. They don't bury them in normal. Normal ways, so they've been burying them under the Batcave, and somebody got in and stole a bunch of things. So that's one story. The next story has been the culmination of the long, super long Joker's gang story, with 10,000 members of the Joker's gang invade Gotham City, and they've been fighting them. And that's been the Norm Brayfogle drawn story with all the old favorites showing up, old Dick Grayson and old Tim Drake and everybody like that. And then Justice League story has been a visit to the Flash Museum because that's opening up again, and and chaos ensues, and then there's Superman's story where he has been kidnapped to another planet because a long time ago he had liberated the slaves of the planet. The slaves overthrew the slave owners, and they became tyrants. So now the slave owners have finally found him and kidnapped him for his war crimes. They consider him a war criminal. So this is all really fun, interesting, non-continuity based, animated verse stories. And I think, Paul, that you would really like them.
I like that. What I like about Batman Beyond is that it's sort of like telling an alternate reality story, but you can still play it as if this is the future.
Right.
And you get to see, like, I love, the Return of the Joker thing where you get to see what happened to Tim and stuff, and just daring choices. And so, yeah, I got to get caught up on this.
Yeah. Check it out. Or just check out the shorts online. They're all available there. So those are the books of the week we wanted to talk about. You can go to fanboy.com/comics and make your pull list. You can rate and review your books, and you can also make your own pick of the week choices. And we like to run down the top five picks of the week as chosen by the audience. And Paul, why don't you run down that list for everybody?
Sure. Number five, Daredevil. Daredevil number 23 at 7.8%. Four is Thor, God of Thunder number 5 at 10.6%. Three, Lock and Key Omega number 3, 12.5%. That's a nice surprise. Two, Hellblazer number 300, 13.2%. And number one, Saga number 10 at 36.5%.
Gotta say, nice. in the Brian K. Vaughn Scott Snyder battle, Vaughn's losing a little ground.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a great spread, though, and four of them are above 10%. I like to see that.
You can go to fanboy.com/comics. When you make your pull list, you can also write your own user reviews, and we like to highlight some of those in the show. And the first one is from user 400 years, or YRS, and he reviewed Harbinger number 9, gave a story of 5 out of 5, and the art of 5 out of 5, and 1.7% of you made it your pick of the week. And 400 years says about Harbinger number 9, although Harbinger's Valiant's team book, Joshua Dysart has been doing some fantastic character work within these pages. Starting with number 6, each issue has featured the background story of a certain character. This one featured Faith Herbert, who is an overweight, happy-go-lucky type of pop culture nerd. Within the 22 story pages, Dysart does a fantastically touching job carving out exactly what has made Faith who she is today. If you aren't reading this book, you are missing out on a great character-driven action book. Although it's pricey at $3.99, it's a nice and meaty read where I definitely feel like I've got my money's worth. It's one of the very few books I will reread a few times before putting it away because it's that good.
Valiant's great. They're doing just quietly, sort of steadily in the background, are doing like a new 52 reboot of their characters from, the 90s, like competently though. Like they're doing it in a smaller scale, and they let the characters establish themselves in their own books, like Harbinger and Exo Man of War, and Bloodshot and things like that, Archer and Armstrong. And only now are they doing this Harbinger Wars thing coming up. So their event, and it's I don't know. It's if you like continuity in your superhero stories, I think it's a good sort of pocket of the comics market to check out. Harbinger, I think, is one of the stronger books. I really like this Faith character. mentioned in the review that she's sort of, you know, overweight, but a very enthusiastic nerd kind of character. She's like a big fan of Firefly and Battlestar Galactica and stuff like that. And, you know, when we talked about like Snapshot and how it was a really grating depiction of what a comic fan is, this is the reverse of that. This is just really refreshing. She's very enthusiastic about the things she likes. It's all the best things about being, you know, a nerd or a geek if you go into that kind of thing. But it's just she's a fan, and now she gets to be a superhero. So she's you know, a bit overweight, but she can fly. She's Zephyr, this character, and I don't know. It's refreshing to see something like that where it's not a, you know, look down your nose kind of thing at nerds and comic book readers and. A great female character, great female hero. So check out this book. It's good.
Well, that's a perfect segue to the next one.
I'll actually do this one. Okay. Darkhawk 2099 read Captain Marvel number 10, gave the story a 4 out of 5 and the art a 5 out of 5 and 0% made a pick of the week. It's amazing what a fresh new coat of paint will do for a good book. After trying and failing to get into the new Captain Marvel series, mainly due to the look of the art, I decided to check back when Philippe Andrade took over on interiors. And sweet Jesus, am I ever glad I did. Andrade's work and Carol's lengthened hair really gave this book a shot in the arm it needed to go from good to great. During the action panels, his art really jumps off the page and yet manages to stay sweet and grounded during the slower character moments in the issue. The story is great and easy to jump into. It also packs some of the great character moments for a character that I feel is often dismissed when written into events and team books. On top of that, who can resist a cameo by Captain America on a hover bike?
I actually saw this exact review on the site yesterday, and it inspired me to pick up the book on Comixology because I read the first issue and then I can never really get into it. And I have the same feelings that it was kind of the art was keeping me away. But I'm a huge Philippe Andrade fan. The John Carter book he did the first one of those Marvel John Carter books.
Right.
And it's like you don't see that in mainstream superhero books. It's just it's a weird science fiction style. It's a European style, and but hearing that was going on with this character and hearing a lot of positive buzz from some of my friends, I decided to check it out. It's great.
I really like her as a character, and the one thing is he sort of mentioned that she disappears into larger things, and I always felt like she was a really important part of the team things that she was part of for a long time. I feel like she's a character that gets respected, but her you know, solo books never went anywhere.
I feel like they were definitely trying to push that reasons. In events, like a lot of the Bendis stuff. They're really trying to push her as an important character. But
she always has been, as long as, you know, at least in this last sort of era of the Avengers, whatever, the last 10 years or so. Like, she's always been, you know, very powerful, a big deal. Even going back to, like, was it Busick's run, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm. I mean, way back then.
The Warbird stuff.
Yeah, but what I really like here is that it's a superhero who can't, is grounded. She can't, you know, she can't fly, and everyone's telling her to take it easy and stuff. And you don't ask someone like that in that position, an experienced, seasoned superhero, and a female superhero too, who's, you know, sometimes second in line to the guys. So this is a strong woman, and she wants to do what she does, and she's being asked not to. And it ends in this great battle, and that art is so good, and with the Jordi Belair colors, it's just,
it is good looking, isn't it?
Yeah, so I'm on board for this.
Wowzers.
All right, so you can go to fandom.com/comics. You can rate and review your books and write a user review, and hopefully get it on the show. Let's do an email as we're rapidly running out of time on the show. The first, our email actually is from someone who'd like to remain anonymous, and you'll see why in a second. He writes and says, there's one comic shop in my town, and for the past years I have maintained a weekly pull list. This evolved into also giving the owner an order list from the monthly previews catalog. The problem is, I don't always get the books I ask for. Each week, things I order are either not on my pull list but are on the shelf, or they were just never ordered. Each month, I end up getting about a half dozen books from an online retailer to make up for the gaps in my pull list. I want to support local businesses, but at the same time, I want all my books. I enjoy going to the store each week and enjoy talking to the owner and being a part of the local comic community. I hate to give that up. What advice do you have?
Now, Connor, I know how you used to feel about this in the past. I'm curious where you are on it now.
About what?
What your relationship is with your retailer. I think it's the same.
Yeah, I don't have any relationship with my retailer.
You don't want one. You want no.
I don't want one.
Attached.
No, I don't want one because I don't agree with the way comics are. The market is run. I don't agree with having this pre-order. I don't agree with having being, you know, stores making you tell them what you're going to buy in advance. I don't agree with any of that. So I don't. You know, in the last 2 weeks, I've gone to different stores to buy my books because they were more one was more convenient for the other than from week to week. So I don't ever want to be stuck from buying at one store. You know, but that being said, I understand why people do pre-order, and I understand why the, you know, stores want to do it. What I don't agree with is if you do take an order, then you have to fulfill it. And if he's not fulfilling it, that's the major problem I see here.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like he's in constant contact with the guy, you know, giving in previews and stuff and orders and everything and coming in week to week. Just have a conversation and say, you know, some things are missing here. And I mean, you don't have to give the guy, have an ultimatum and say, if you don't, you know, if you don't get this right, I'm going to go to digital. Just make it
or
clear
not even
that
digital,
stuff
you know,
is missing.
Places you can, you know, DCBS is brisk business over people who don't have shops or good shops around them.
Right. Well, I'm saying don't be threatening. Just be like, some stuff is falling through the, at least at first, you know, stuff is falling through the cracks.
The thing that's happening here is that what you've got is a business relationship that's being mixed up with a personal relationship.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is the kind of thing that can happen, like, with the person who cuts your hair or the person who, you know, does whatever. Like, you're actually, because you have, like, this sort of more casual relationship, you go in there, you'll talk comics, whatever, they're actually not doing the business part of it the way that you want. They're not living up to your expectations or possibly, I guess, their promises, because if you're going through the effort of pre-ordering and filling out the friggin' forms and everything, you know, you should have all that stuff.
And because it's the only shop in town, he can do whatever he wants. Mm-hmm. There's no competition for his business, at least in person. And you know, it's sad to say a lot of comic shop owners aren't good businessmen, and so it's not surprising that he doesn't run his business very well.
It's up to you know that it's one of those things when you have a relationship with somebody. You know, nothing's perfect. You know, you take the good with the bad. Like, what's more important to you? You want to make sure you get all the books you have. Are you afraid of hurting the guy's feelings? You got to make those calls. Connor, I mean, that's the thing that you want to avoid. You just want to go get your book somewhere, and I don't want to have a thing. But some people like that. Some people like that regularity of it. You know, I do. I know the guys who run my store. They're friends of theirs. All at the same time, though, I don't have a list. I don't pre-order. I don't do any of that stuff because I was upfront with that when I came in. Like, I was like, I want a shop that just has all of the stuff that I would want otherwise.
Right.
I don't know.
It's tough. I mean, I think that you confront him, not even in a bad way, but if you confront him, the risk you run is losing the social aspect of it.
But you know what? That'll probably fix itself.
Yeah, maybe.
So Josh, you reminded me. I want to give some love to Kadera at the haircutter in Willow Grove. You're right about the Redken. Thanks.
So Anonymous, you should, if you haven't already, say something. Say, hey, I've been getting books I've been ordering. You know, what's the deal here? I don't want to have to order online and see how that goes. You know, don't make it a big, you know, confrontation, but just point out that you've been ordering things and not been getting them. If you've been paying for them and not getting them, then you got a bigger problem. I just don't know how that works because I've never done it. But I don't know if you pay up front for or what, how that goes. But
that's when you got to burn the place down.
So
get some friends.
Have a conversation with him. Talk to him about it and say you're not happy that your order has not been fulfilled and, you know, figure out why.
Get some V for Vendetta masks.
Yeah.
And that's cocktails. Your last resort. You can email us at contact@ifanboy.com. And so we had to skip the voicemails because we're running late on time. But if you want to call us, 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697. If you have any questions or we want to get your discussion topics on the show, that's where you do it. And we also have other shows.
Yeah.
Paul and
yes.
Josh.
let me talk about Make Comics Podcast first. That's me and Andy Schmidt. Talking about making comics, it's single-handedly the thing I get the most comments on these days is people who are looking to break into comics, and we'll pick a topic. A lot of that stuff's based off user emails at this point now, and we'll talk about some aspect of making comics, whatever part of it you want to work in, and that's comes out on Mondays mostly. That's going to be Mondays if it comes out. But that's not all. Is it?
I got some splodes heading your way. We got you a book splode on Planet Hulk by Greg Pak and a whole host of artists, and that's with Jim and Ryan and Timmy. That's coming soon.
For those of you who may not have been around, the book splode was our we haven't done it in a few years. I don't think it was our show about we pick a book, we pick a work, a longer work of comics, and we have a long in depth conversation on it. So.
This is back in the Halcyon days, yeah. And then we also have Talksplode, you know, Talksplode. It's a longer interview. And I'm going to be talking to Gabriel Hardman and Karina Becko about their upcoming Star Wars Legacy Prisoner of the Floating World, big Star Wars book coming out from Dark Horse at the end of March. So that's coming soon as well.
And you can find all of those shows as well as Josh's Book of the Week review and the upcoming Book of the Month review at ifanboy.com, where we do discussions on the weekly daily news, and we got daily columns and all kinds of fun stuff happening there, in addition to ifanboy.com/about, which is our staff page where you can find our social network links, where you can be our friend online. And you can follow all of that at twitter.com/ifanboy and facebook.com/ifanboy.
And you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com or leave a voicemail at 1-888-FANBOYS. That's 326-2697 with any questions, comments, concerns, discussion, topics, etc.
As we've said many times before, if you like this show, please go leave a review on iTunes for this show or any of the other ones that we have. Also, in addition to that, you know, whenever you see anything on the site, or if there's something about anything we do that tickles your fancy and you want to get the word out there, we encourage you to please do so. If you put it on your Facebook page or share it or tumble it. Is that the word? Is that the verb that you would use for that? To tumble something?
Yeah, with like an apostrophe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So do that. Do that. But you guys, we have no advertising budget.
Street team.
I'm going to be honest with you right up front. There is no money in the advertising column. So that means it's your job. And we thank you, those of you who've done it so well in the past. And please keep it up. Thank you.
Well, another week. Another week. A little older than before. Until next time, which will be another week older, I'm Connor.
I'm Paul.
I will literally be older next week.
Yeah. I think we'll all be literally older.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but
science.
Numerically. I'm older right now than when I said that a minute ago. Not the relativity of it all. Anyway, I'm Josh.